better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3,704 of the Survival Podcast. This is also, for the first time in a while, a Bitcoin breakout, number 59, 59 episodes of Bitcoin breakout we've done. We haven't done one in a while. And with certain goings on, I thought it was a good time to do one. Of course, I'm talking about a recent touch of an all-time high, and then we crashed to only 117,000. Will it ever be the same again? People are crazy, man. I actually had several people today tell me Bitcoin's crashing. So I said Bitcoin would hit 115 minimum before August, 20 days ago, in public. It's sitting at 117, and you're going to tell me it's crashing. I have no have fun staying poor. What we're going to be talking about today, though, is building wealth with Bitcoin for everyone. And I want to kind of set the stage for the mindset of how to approach this episode. I'm actually going to break it down into why there is almost no risk at this point for long-term money. I'm going to tell you why it's probably a better time to invest than all of you keep telling me you wish you would have when I told you before. And you're using that as an excuse for not doing it when I'm telling you to do it now. I'm going to tell you how to do it. I'm going to tell you why all of your excuses are BS and a whole bunch more. And hopefully this will create more new, will mint more new Bitcoiners. It will mine more new Bitcoiners. It will forge them through proof of work. That is my goal today. And I also want to point out, I don't benefit from this. There's some people, they're special people. My pay grade in the world of even influencers, overall influencers, like homesteading, permaculture, all the stuff I talk about, is fairly low level. I mean, I make a good living with it and all. I enjoy being able to reach a lot of people, but, you know, I don't have as much sway as even any single person that's on TV regularly or something like that. I certainly, and I pale in comparison. I don't have as much influence as a person like Joe Rogan has. If you were comparing me to like 2 seconds of Joe Rogan, my entire body of work probably doesn't influence the world that much. So the special people that think like when Jack Spirico or somebody like him comes out and does a pro Bitcoin thing, we're doing it so number will go up. You don't understand anything about the landscape we're in right now. Nothing. We're in a landscape right now where hardcore Bitcoiners are like, where's the retail investor? Where's the retail investor? I'm going to tell all you moron hardcore influencer Bitcoiners where the retail investor is. Right where they've always been. You just can't see them anymore. There's more of them than ever. They're buying more than ever. Okay? They're buying more than ever. But when you are looking for the retail effect, while companies like MicroStrategy or StrategyB now are buying, you know, billions of dollars per buy, and they're doing it with, you know, direct exchange, not over the counter buys. It's you can't see the effect anymore, because when you and I and whatever go out and we buy $200,000 worth of Bitcoin, it doesn't affect anything at all. And that's good. That's good. Because if it did, that would mean when we sold $2,000, it would affect things. What we're looking for is liquidity and depth of liquidity. So this asset is trading on average between $20 and $30 billion a day, every day, like clockwork. That's a massive, what you call depth of liquidity. Meaning when you hear somebody like they have $1 billion worth of Doge. No, they don't. Because if they tried to sell $10 million worth of it in one day, they would crash the price, let alone $1 billion with it. I mean, if you were a guy somehow sitting on $1 billion worth of Dogecoin, you need to be selling like $10,000 a day maximum for as long as you can get away with it until you start to dilute the market value, right? With Bitcoin, if you sold $10 million worth of Bitcoin, it wouldn't move the needle. So the idea that a guy like me is on here talking about Bitcoin because I'll enrich myself because I own more Bitcoin than you, and if you go out and you spend $50 on it today, it's just stupid. And I don't have time for people like that, but I want to say it up front. But the mindset I want you to come at with this today is the title of the show, Building Bitcoin Wealth. So I'm going to give you two phrases, and I want you to be completely intellectually honest with at least yourself. And I would love it if some of you guys would post your responses in the comments. And as well, as I'll tell you in the beginning, those of you who are in the live stream, if you are posting something in the comments and it is a question, please put the word question in all caps, just like this. I haven't even read this question yet, but I will at the end, and I will get to your question at the end if you do that and if I happen to see it. The word question in all caps and then your question. If you ask me about a shitcoin, I'm not even going to respond, so don't. Don't ask me what I think of insert shitcoin here, and if somebody does, you guys in the live chat do that. But here's what I want. Again, tell me what you really think when I say this phrase, get rich. And hold on before you comment, get rich. I want, when you hear that, how much work does it sound like and how much time do you think it is? Do you think it's a lot of work, a little bit of work, or rolling dice? And when I say get rich, are you thinking in hours, minutes, days, weeks, years, or decades, right? Where are you thinking in there, okay? And when I say build wealth, let's ask the same question. How much work comes to your mind? Does it sound like building wealth? Does that sound like a lot of wealth or a lot of work, and you're thinking in years to decades when I say build wealth? And so some of you people are saying things like, even when I say get rich, you're thinking a lot of work and a long time horizon. I asked you to be intellectually honest, Charles. The first thing that comes to your mind, not the second, when you catch yourself and say, well, that doesn't work, right? When people hear get rich, what they tend to think is, I'm going to do almost nothing and I'm going to get a lot really fast. This is the person chasing the next Bitcoin, right? The person that wants to buy 10,000 of something worth a penny and dump it a couple months later when it moons to $1.50. That's get rich, right? Build wealth sounds like working hard long term, because it is, at least to a degree, working hard long term. That's what build wealth is. So when I come at this today, I'm going to talk about building wealth. Now, it doesn't mean that we can't drastically accelerate your time to financial freedom and retirement while building wealth smartly. But if you're the main reason that you will completely screw yourself with Bitcoin while it remains the best asymmetric investment favorable to the investor in the world, is because you either still don't trust it for whatever reason in HFSP, okay, if that's you, or what you have something that we're going to get deeply into today called unit bias. Unit bias. You're like, the hell with compounded annual growth rate. That's all complicated. I want to buy a lot for a little so I can make a bunch. And that is shit thinking. And if you really wanted to do that, because what you want to do is use that as an excuse, most of you anyway. If you really wanted to do that, then you would have done it with Bitcoin back in 2013, 2014, because it was that 13-14 crossover. It was like, buy this shit. That's why I started saying, like, you need this in your life. Like, there's too much potential upside to not do this. But at that point, it was an asymmetric risk against unfavorable to the investor. In other words, it was huge potential upside, but the risk actually outweighed the gains. And that's why I said, be careful with it. Back then, I used to say, don't put any money on it that you wouldn't go into a Vegas casino with. Put it on the black and take one spin of the wheel and see if it doubles or not. Like, that was the mindset that I was telling you to have back then. Conversely, we eventually got to a crossover point where it looked pretty good and it became a symmetrical risk, meaning the risk and the reward were sort of kind of equal. And eventually we crossed over and now we have an asymmetric risk in favor of the investor. But because of unit bias, what you're saying you want is what you already had and didn't want when you had it. And there isn't going to be another Bitcoin. There isn't going to be a next Bitcoin. It is not going to happen. It is not going to happen. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. That doesn't mean there might not be something with a quick flash in the pan. And if you want to chase that, you might as well take your money to the convenience store and buy scratcher tickets. That's the odds you're playing there. That is an asymmetric risk that is unfavorable to you. So if you're going to build wealth right now, you need to start actually thinking about Bitcoin the way that they told you you were supposed to think about stocks and bonds, mutual funds, and eventually ETFs 20 years ago. take a portion of your money and put it in there and leave it alone. Dollar cost average. And the difference is a good investment in that time frame would double your money every 6 to 10 years. You know, you're looking at returns that would be somewhere between 8 and about 15% aggregate average across a decade. That's what did that. That's what got that doubling rate. And then somebody comes to you and says, here's an asset that if it performs at its absolute lowest rate over 5 years, will double your money every year or two. And that's not good enough. And now I want to go chase a gamble. So we're coming at this from building wealth, not getting rich. Now, when you build wealth long enough, eventually you get rich. But the mindset going in is what's really important. Before we dig into all this, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day, number one today, is Start 9 Sovereign Computing. With a Start 9 server, you can take back all control of your data and your technology. You can have end-to-end encrypted message with your family, your friends, your community that no one can break. I mean, no one. And no one else controls. In fact, it's almost impossible for anybody to even find the doorway into it unless you tell them where it is. How's that for secure? You can access your data, your pictures, your files, whatever, from any device in the world over Tor, again, completely encrypted and under your control. And no one ever can turn you off. You also can run your own Bitcoin node, your own Bitcoin Lightning node, either or, and a bunch of other things. And, you know, with the Bitcoin Lightning node, there's a little bit of technical knowledge required to do what's called balanced liquidity. Most people do not need to run their own Lightning node, but if you want to, you can. Bitcoin node is really easy to install, super simple. You can connect a wallet to it then and start managing your own wallet with your own node. That's really easy to do. But it's still a little technical knowledge. Everything else Start 9 does, if you can pick up a phone and you can install an app and you can configure an app and you can use an app, which all of you can, so stop making excuses, you can use Start 9 and they will even give you an expert to help onboard you to your new Start 9 device. Check it out today, start9.com. Remember, we have a huge discount, 9% off all Start 9 product in the MSB, if you're an MSB member, so make sure you use that. And if you use the Fold card to buy your Start 9, from my understanding, it actually went down their discount, but it's like 5%, and you can stack the two. So that's like 13% off a fairly expensive product that's totally worth it. So consider being an MSB member if you are not already one. And today we're talking about wealth building. So it makes sense that our other sponsor today is Wealth, the Wealth Studying Podcast from John Pugliano. John is one of us. He's an excellent investment manager. I'm big on Bitcoin. I'm not one of these people that's all in either. I like to have diversification in my investments. And John is a great source of information for that and a great investment manager. You can listen to his podcast at wealthstudying.com. But like I said, John's one of us. He is a prepper. He is a homesteader. He's got the garden. He is a ham radio operator. He's got the stuff stored at home in case there's hard times. He is one of us. I've been working with John one way or another since 2010. That's 15 years. If I trust John, you know you can trust him too. So check out his podcast. It only runs about 1 hour a day. I'm sorry, only about 15 minutes about once a week. I was working on some back end stuff there and I misspoke. So anyway, I really appreciate everybody tuning in today. I want to get caught up displaying everybody's comments. So I'm going to try to figure out about where I need to be. I think it's about right there. And I'm going to go ahead and try to put people's comments up on the screen for people that are watching the video later. But what I'm going to actually lead off with today isn't anything for me at all. It is from, I believe it's actually from a Seth Meyers skit about Bitcoin. And the reason I say I believe that is somebody posted it on Facebook and kind of at-shouted me, like, look, even SNL sort of gets Bitcoin and explains it perfectly. And it's a comedy skit, and it ends by taking a stab at it, which all of these clowns did. And when you hear how much it was trading for at the time, I think the high was like 17,000 at the time, you realize how old this is. But the reason I say I think it's Seth Meyers is because since it was on Facebook, and I'm pretty sure this video will get demonetized under copyright bullshit when I add this into the feed and it gets seen. And who knows, they might even take the damn thing down. I don't know. But I figured maybe I would have a little less chance of that if I brought it in from YouTube. So instead of using the Facebook version, I would use the YouTube version. Maybe the algorithm gods would be a little bit more friendly to me or what have you, or me more likely to see under fair use or whatever. So I tried to look it up, and I couldn't find it. But I found a skit with the same women in it from Late Night with Seth Meyers. So I think that's what it's really from. But I'm going to play this for you, and then I'm going to come back to you, and I'm going to explain to you why it actually is, I think, better than they intended. If you know about a certain common meme in the Bitcoin space, it kind of is that meme without trying to be, which is why it pulls it off well, but not perfectly. But here we go.
I love our little get-togethers.
Well, you know what I don't love?
What?
Not knowing where to put my money for retirement.
There are just too many options.
401ks, IRAs, savings?
It's so confusing.
Well, you know where I put my money?
Where?
Bitcoin.
What's Bitcoin?
Bitcoin is the first decentralized digital cryptocurrency that works without a central bank.
Well, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, and it's so simple to use. Transactions take place through the use of cryptography and are verified by network nodes and recorded in an immutable public distributed ledger called a blockchain. What could be simpler than that?
Nothing. It sounds great.
Right. So is it like investing in stocks?
Kind of, but not at all.
Well, I'm on board.
Really? Because I have so many more questions.
Not me.
Where can I get one of these bitcoins? Can I buy one at my local bank?
Of course not. What a dumb question.
But it was valid.
No, it was dumb.
Bitcoins aren't like regular currency. They're mined.
In a physical mine, like gold?
That's ridiculous. Bitcoins are mined on computers using the SHA-256 hashing algorithm, creating 12.5 bitcoins per block.
Uh-huh.
That is until mid-2020.
Uh-huh.
And then afterwards, 6.25 bitcoins per block for 4 years until the next halving.
Wait, are we still talking about money?
Cryptocurrency.
This sounds so simple.
Shut up, Margaret. There's no way you understood all of that.
Okay.
So how much do one of these bitcoins cost?
$17,000.
$17,000? That's insane.
Sounds like a bargain.
Ugh. And how do you keep track of these things' values?
Just check the internet. So far today, its value has gone up $1,000. And now it's down $800, and now it's up $500.
Sounds like you can't lose.
You absolutely can, Margaret.
How do I buy Bitcoin?
It's easy. Just go online and give them your credit card number.
Give who your credit card number?
Bitcoin. And then let the internet do what it does.
What does it do exactly?
It bitcoins.
Here's my credit card.
No! So who started Bitcoin?
We think it was Satoshi Nakamoto.
Who is that?
No one really knows.
He sounds cute.
Margaret, I swear to God.
And Bitcoin is the only cryptocurrency I trust with my kids' college fund.
That's smart investing.
That's bad. Crazy.
Oh, now it's down to $3. Easy come, easy go.
All right. So I'm going to ask again, because nobody got the meme, at least in a live chat. I'm going to give it a little bit of time. But this is actually, in a way, it doesn't completely pull it off. But as they tried to make the skit work by having one of the characters know enough about Bitcoin to be able to play her part, they actually created a meme. They actually created a meme in kind of like sort of pseudo real life, I guess. And here's the meme. I guarantee you guys in the space, you've seen this meme before or some other version of it. And basically you have the bell curve of IQ. And you have the simpleton idiot on one side, you know, with an IQ somewhere in like the sub 85 range. And then you have the average smart person in the middle. And then you have the genius on the other side of the bell curve, which is pretty much how things work out, except the idiot and the genius are both very, very happy. And the, you know, the average smart person, the person that, you know, is proud of their degrees or whatever, is miserable. And in this particular version of the meme, you have both the genius and the idiot going 250K. And then the guy in the middle is like, laughing my ass off. Imagine thinking 250K is realistic. That's kind of what they just did there, isn't it? I mean, it really is what they did. They did exactly what the meme said, right? You have the really smart person and the complete idiot that are just like, oh yeah, Bitcoin, I'm just going to do that. How can I lose? And then you have the more thinking person in the center, but yet somehow the thinking person is completely wrong. And that is part and parcel of the problem here. When you hear about Bitcoin, there are a lot of seemingly totally valid reasons to reject it out of hand. I can't touch it. I can't feel it. It's not backed by the government, right? Like, if you already know, like, what backed by the government means is dog shit, then that one just goes away. But still, like, well, who created it? Where did it come from? How is it here? How does it work? And when you don't look at it and actually fully comprehend and understand it, it's very understandable to me anyway, how you would get into a point of saying, I don't trust this. Especially, and Mike's got it right. Mike here is saying, hi, I'm that idiot, and it worked out fantastic. Exactly. And, you know, I'm not going to say I'm a genius at all, right? I will tell you that I had my own doubts, but I was willing to do the work to cure my ignorance. And in curing my ignorance, I became more and more confident. And I don't know if that makes me the idiot or that makes me the economic genius in all this. It doesn't really matter. What it makes me is not the one in the middle that's miserable. Okay? So, again, what we started out with this week is Bitcoin hits this massive all-time high. And then it's dropped, and I think when I checked last, it was like 116-something. And, again, I could care less. I don't care if it's at 109 right now. It's actually 117, so it went back up since it went back down. That's the volatility of Bitcoin, and that's fine. Volatility is a feature, not a bug. But here's what happened, and it's part of why I knew it was going to happen. So on June 25th, I said Bitcoin will hit 115 minimum before August, and by August it will probably be in the 120s to mid-120s. And the way I knew that is I just looked at some really basic stuff, which was there was a massive amount of short positions. There were a whole lot of short-selling traders who had decided that we had hit peak. We had not hit peak, and I knew that. We were nowhere near peak. We're not even at the right time to hit peak. So they had all these short positions, and when they set themselves up that way, it was like they're going to get wiped out, and it's to the tune of billions of dollars. Well, when you have that many shorts in place, it actually artificially for a time can suppress the price. And so when those prices get let go, I want you to think about it. This is not a technical explanation, but it's a good metaphor to understand it. Think of it like you have something really buoyant, and it should be floating, let's say, if it's your arm down to your elbow, everything below your wrist should be below the water, and your fist should be above the water for this particular time and the buoyancy the thing has in the water that it's in. And something artificially pushes it under the waterline. Some big heavy weight is holding it down. When you take the weight off, what happens? It comes well up above the waterline, and then it kind of bounces, and it finds equilibrium at where it was supposed to be. How did I know that was going to happen? Because of pattern. Because this is what always happens. When the short sellers get on the wrong side of their trades, what I just said always happens. The price always blows above where the market really has it priced for that time, but it's coming from below where it was suppressed, and it always kind of blows its top and then kind of bounces a little bit and then kind of goes back to doing whatever it's going to do, which at this point in the cycle is continue to go up. That's what it is. And is it done bouncing yet? I don't know. How far was it suppressed? How high did it bounce? Like, all of that matters. But what really doesn't matter to me is that it does it. I don't care. I buy Bitcoin every day, and I don't need to. I have enough Bitcoin. I probably got about 5 more years of full-time work left in me. And with what I have and my other investments and everything I've saved in my life, I'm good. I can walk away now. My retirement will not be quite as good as it will be if I wait 5 more years, but I could do it. And yet I'm still buying a pissant amount. You know, I was doing 5, then I went to 6, now I'm doing $10 a day. I do it more to be an example. I do it more because I've been asked things like, do you eat your own dog food? And stupid shit like that. When I, you know, I only have, what is it, a 12-year track record now of suggesting that you do this. It's not like I showed up yesterday and started teaching this. But I also look at it as, it's a valid question. If I'm telling you you should buy a little Bitcoin every day, then I should be doing it too. And I want to say to adjust some of the things I'm going to say today. When I get to certain parts of the show, if daily is not your thing, but you do weekly or monthly, to me that's still daily because you could calculate what it would be per day. I think it's fun to do per day. I think it changes everything. Every single one of you that's gone to a daily DCA, even people that were doing it before, even people that were buying like $300 a month and they just said, okay, that's $10 a day, and switched it to the daily, what I've heard from you is, oh my God, I understand it better. I do too, and I can't even explain why, right? Maybe I'm the idiot on the wrong side of the bell curve here. Maybe I have a high IQ, but not for Bitcoin. Maybe I'm a dumbass with Bitcoin, but yet I'm the one with the Bitcoin. I'm the one with sats. I'm the one whose sat stack gets a little bit bigger every day, and I don't have to do anything except let it happen now. And so maybe I'm not as stupid as I look on the bell curve. I don't know. But you, like, this is something I say to people all the time, whether it's dealing with another relative, dealing with a boss, dealing with a coworker, dealing with some sort of social situation. Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Right? Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Well, I know what people say, money doesn't make you happy, but I've been broke and I've been, you know, okay, and I've been wealthy. And you know which one of those three made me happiest? Wealthy. I'm not going to apologize for it. In the words of Raj from Big Bang Theory, when there's an episode about getting a bunch of money, they said money can't buy happiness. He goes, do you know what you can buy with money? You can buy a jet ski. Tell me you've ever seen anybody not smiling on a jet ski. Okay? And I think it's a joke, but I think it makes point, right? But what's wrecking people's thinking right now, and I'm seeing it everywhere, is what's called unit bias. And I can't find the episode because the title must not have it in it. But Guy Swan did a podcast months ago, maybe last year. I'm not sure. But it was one of his guys read on Bitcoin Audible where he reads the article somebody else wrote. And it was about unit bias. And if you could find that Guy Swan interview for me and get it to me, like email it to me, right? Email it to me while we're live. And by the time I'm ready to put the show together, it's in my email box. I'll add it to the show notes today. But unit bias is when I can't do it because I'll never be a whole coiner is an example of unit bias. Believing that your investments are making you money in the stock market because your dollar number go up is a unit bias. Because if the dollar number went up, but it won't buy more today than when you put the money in, all you did was stay even with the cost of goods. You didn't actually profit. And most of your money that's at risk today is in what you would call a symmetric investment scheme. Most of your stocks, bonds, ETFs, mutual funds, et cetera, if you're at least picking quality ones, you know, ETFs that contain the Magnificent Seven, at least, if not, it's just them, et cetera. Like, if you're in that, what you're probably doing is you probably feel like you're making money. Your numbers of dollars are going up. But if you say, well, I've been putting this money in for this long, you aggregate average all the money you put in, and you aggregate average when the money went in, and you say, this much money would have bought me a house in 2005, and here in 2025, it won't buy me a house, an equivalent house to like 3-2 standard everyday American house, right? It would have bought me a car, a brand new, nicely optioned, mid-level car, and it won't do it today. It doesn't matter, number go up, your purchasing power went down. That's where most people are. And that's unit bias, though, that they'll stay in those investments, but they'll also stay out of good investments. Most people will choose, for example, and I like both of these metals, so I'm not picking on one, but gold and silver. Most people that have very little money and don't think in an economically astute way will choose silver, not because it is easier to have small units that could be bartered with in the future, which is a legitimate reason, but simply because I get more. Right? I spent $2,000 and I know gold's moved up and down from there. So I don't even know where it is today. It doesn't matter to me. But let's just say gold was at $2,000 and silver was at $20. And they said, well, with $2,000, you know, I can get 100x more silver pieces. Yeah, but what really matters is the appreciation in percentage. That's what really matters. Like if you invest $1,000 in two things, and one you got a dollar a piece, so you have 1,000 units, and the other one you bought for $1,000 is a single unit, but the single unit goes up 50% in value, and the 1,000 units go up 25% in value. The one that was more units made you $250, and the one that was a single unit made you $500. The unit doesn't matter. The return on the total investment is what matters. This is so fundamentally basic that you wonder why people don't see it. Well, there was a famous businessman named Henry Ford who was one time speaking to how the fractional reserve banking system works and how monetary creation worked in fractional reserve. And what he said was, the process is so simple that the mind repels it. In other words, your mind cannot accept that they just literally just issue debt and then print money against it. That's it. That's the whole thing. You would think you need like reams of paper to explain this complex. No, it's that simple. They just issue debt and they print money against the debt that they issue. And if they don't have somebody to borrow the money, loan the money from, they loan it to themselves. There it is. That's the third piece. Now you got the whole thing, right? So monetary unit bias, right? This idea, just total numbers versus total value, is so simple that it's hard for you to grok. And it's hard for you to accept it. Am I really that stupid on that particular, you know, bell curve? Am I sitting over here with an IQ of 74? And I'll tell you something about IQ. When it comes to different, not your total overall IQ, but when it comes to being tunnel focused on things, we all spend time in the middle of the curve, miserable. We all spend time on the genius curve, and we all have that day that we wake up and we're going to lick the shit out of that window. It doesn't matter how dirty that window is, how long it's been cleaned, how many streaks of God knows what are on it, how much mosquito and fly shit is on it. We're going to lick that freaking window with a 72 IQ. All of us. And anybody that can't admit it will never be able to cure ignorance, because that is willful ignorance. I'm going to lick my window and claim I'm not doing it. So unit bias is holding everybody back. I've seen this so much since this new all-time high. But if I invested all the money I could afford in Bitcoin right now, I might be able to buy 0.002 Bitcoin. Well, okay. Maybe. I don't know how much money you have. And I'm going to say, because I'm going to be kind of a little bit over the top, elbow macho man savage to the forehead off the top buckle today, that I will admit there may be some people that listen to this show either live or later that you literally have no money. You're driving a piece of shit beater car held together with bailing wire. You do not buy Starbucks coffee. You do not eat avocado toast. You don't smoke 5 packs of cigarettes a week. And there's $100 or whatever it is now, right? You don't do any of that shit. And you're living one step away from being homeless in the street. I'll give you a fucking pass if that's you. 99% of you, it isn't you. Quit pretending it is. Quit pretending it is. Because my advice is buy $6 a day, $5 a day, $2 a day, $1 a day, $10 a day, $50 a month, $100 a month. And if you're driving a car with an $800 payment, which is the median payment on a new car now, and you tell me you can't afford to save $5 a day for yourself, then you're living economically irresponsibly. You should not be driving an $800 a month car if you don't have $5 a day to spend on your future. Now, I will also give you a pass in this way. There are people that ended up in that position for whatever reason you did. You don't have an exit strategy right now. You cannot make economic sense of getting out of that car loan or lease. Okay, so you're stuck with that. So you have to find other ways to eke this out. But the idea that I'm not going to buy Bitcoin because I'll never own one is nonsensical. It's nonsensical. If Bitcoin inevitably will hit $1 million, and I don't think there's many people that doubt that at this point, not people that aren't in the middle of that bell curve, like all of us idiots and all the financial geniuses know this is inevitable, and it's not going to stop there. That if you own 0.1 Bitcoin, you'd have $100,000. Now, that might not be rich, but it's a key component of wealth. And if it can be done with $5 to $10 a day that you're already spending on some shit you don't need, especially if you're 20, 30 years old, maybe you should be doing that instead. Right? Here's what I'm going to suggest for everybody listening to this today. Even those of you who have invested your ass off, you're like me, you could walk from work right now if you wanted to. From this day, Tuesday, until next Tuesday, do something I've recommended for other projects. Keep a spending journal. A spending journal is not a budget. Now, most of you don't have one, and you should, because that'd be called being a fucking grown-up. That way you would know how much money you have to invest every month, because it would be income versus expense and surplus. And then you would take and you would break that into this goes here and this goes there and this goes over here. Okay? But you don't. So my point with that is budgets are lies for most people. They don't follow them. This is a spending plan. A spending journal is a record of what occurred. And I want you to just, I don't care if it's a pack of freaking mints. I don't care if it's a six pack of beer. I don't care if it's a pack of cigarettes. I don't care if it's a latte that you only bought because you took your dog for a car ride and you want the dog to enjoy the ride, so you bought them a cup pop. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. By the way, we just lost the Facebook feed, so that is what it is. I don't care why you did it. I just want you to write down that you did it. At the end of 1 week, I want you to sit down and I want you to look at that journal. And I just want you to go through it, and I want you to take a red marker like the teacher used when you were in school. You remember that red marker? You worked so hard, and that bitch just put all that red shit on there. I want you to be the teacher. I want you to go through there, and I just want you to put a red X next to everything you didn't need. Everything you didn't need. Gas and car, green check, need that. Starbucks coffee, red X. I don't drink Starbucks coffee. It's an analogy. It's just a very common vice. Okay, so whatever you make the, I'm not doing this. Don't send it to me. I'll delete it. I won't even look at it. I don't care if you want my, now if you want to send it to me and see this is what I came up with, that's fine. But if you say, well, what would you get rid of? Delete your email. That's what I'll get rid of. Okay, so I want you to do that for yourself. And then I want you to add up the cost of all the red X's. Then I want you to divide it by two. And I want you to look at that number and say, that number easily could have been invested into Bitcoin this week. And I want you to do an experiment. I want you to go to your AI tool of choice and say, if starting in 2015, so we get past that front end where there was like this insane parabolic upswing. If you want to even, 15 would be good, it's 10 years. If in 2015, I had invested this amount in Bitcoin per week, every week, consistently up until today, how much would have I invested? And how much would I have? And then I want you to just look at it. And then I want you to take the profit and divide and multiply it by 0.66. So you only do two-thirds as good as you would have. And I want you to look at that. And I want you to say to yourself, self, would I have done this? Would I have made this deal if I knew it would work out this way? And then you decide what to do next. But kill your unit bias, because it's absolutely stupid. You already own fractional assets. Stop pretending it's different. Do you know how many people have a 401k plan? They have a 401k plan. Okay, great. And, you know, they buy an ETF. And that ETF invests, let's say, in the Magnificent Seven, Amazon, you know, Google, et cetera, right? Meta. Do you think you, every freaking time you make a purchase of that, do you think you own a full share of those stocks? Do you worry about that? Are you like, but that's only like 0.1% of share of Meta. Do you see what I'm saying? How dumb this is. Have you ever bought a stock that was priced at like $800 and you were on a regular buy and you were investing something like $50 a month? You're buying a fraction. What is the difference? What is the difference? Why do you have this unit bias? Because it's been programmed into you. Now ask, who does the programming and what is their goal? Because let me tell you what the goal of the system we live in right now, and we have lived fully in this system since 1971. That's when it really started. You can talk all you want about 1913 and 1933. There was still some tether against this until 71. You live in a system controlled by the Federal Reserve banking cartel, controlling the monetary system, and that system was never meant to exist in a fiat world. Think about it. You think how evil the creature from Jekyll Island is and all that shit. But the Congress that voted for this, the people of your country who didn't throw a revolt over it, who didn't like hang congressmen from lampposts over it, who accepted it and went on with their lives. How much could the Federal Reserve really do to manipulate the monetary supply before 1971? And it was actually quite limited because the Federal Reserve system was agreed to under the gold standard. It was not agreed to under a fiat standard. I don't believe people would have done it. I even think some of the bankers would have went, hold on, I don't know about this back then. But the logical progression of having the government realize, wait, we can issue more dollars. No one audits the gold. Not everybody's going to want their gold at the same time. Same thing the banks had done before. We could cheat a little bit. Well, that worked. We could cheat a little bit more. Oh, shit, there's a recession coming. We need to pump some money. Oh, we can cheat a little bit more. And then France goes, we'd like all our gold, please. No shit. We got to turn it off. So now you exist in this world where money is printed out of thin air, and everything you own and everything you will own is made more expensive at will to enrich others. And those others are the people we call the financial elite. I don't call them the elite because they're not elite. They're not better than us, but economically they're elite. When somebody measures their wealth in billions, that's pretty elite. When somebody measures their wealth in tens of millions, that's pretty elite. That is the quintillionaires, right? Those are the people that enrich themselves off inflation. And the system they designed for you is this, you slave, you pleb, you serf. The only way you're going to make it in retirement, the only way you're going to survive, slave, is to take a piece of your wealth and buy these things, these shares in the companies we own. You have to buy assets, and you have to risk share with us on the value of the asset. And if you do a good job and you defer enough of your spending long enough and you buy enough assets and be a good slave and do what you're told, when you get old and you have a few, you know, a decade, decade and a half, 2 decades maximum to live, you can then live off the value of those assets. Now, the people that set this up, that's not what they do. When they buy an asset, they never sell it. They hold it forever. They grow their net worth infinitely. They hand it down to their heirs. And everything in their life is paid for with debt barred against those assets. And what do you have to do under the current system when you reach retirement age and you're holding those assets that you sacrificed all your life to buy and hold? You have to sell them. And who buys them? The people who told you to buy them and hold them and not sell them until it was time. And what do they buy them with? They borrow against assets they already have to buy your assets on the cheap from you that they know will be worth more in the future to fund their system. That is a perverse system. But here's the thing. Without Bitcoin, this is the only system that could exist. It's the only system that could have come out of it. There is no way around this. This is what was going to happen. So I want to give you one more mental way to think about this. I think most of us, again, would agree Bitcoin will hit $1 million. Someday. I think if you tell somebody, well, you know, that would be a 10X. Anybody that's like not a complete idiot about this, that would be a 10X for Bitcoin. Is that really that off? No, that's pretty standard. Is like, you know, a 1X, 2X increase per annum pretty likely? Averaged out over time? Yeah, okay. So 10X over 10 years. Oh, okay. So 10 years, $1 million. I don't think it's that far, but let's just be conservative. 10 years, Bitcoin will be worth $1 million. Right now, let's just say it's worth about $100,000. That's what it costs. Okay. So what that means is that a sat right now, it takes about 10 of them to make a penny, right? It takes 10 of them to make a penny. And at $1 million, it'll take one. So what that's like saying is, for every penny you invest, you get a dime. And if I just said to you, I have a giant jar of dimes right here, I will trade you dimes for pennies. How many dimes do you want to buy with your pennies? Is not the answer all of them? are you not, like, going through the seat cushions looking for more pennies? As little as the number would be, are you like, this is a guaranteed ROI? I guarantee you at one of my workshops, if I had a giant 5-gallon bucket full of dimes and an empty bucket and said, for every penny you put in the empty bucket, you could take a dime out of the dime bucket, there wouldn't be a dime left in there. You'd be like, people would be going to the store buying pennies, right? I need change of five. I need 500 pennies. We have 500 dimes, okay? Now, I'm going to alter the deal a little bit. Here's the only catch to the deal. You get to trade your penny for a dime, but you have to wait 10 years to have the dime. And when you get the dime, it's like the rule with the genie wishes, no more wishes. You can't take the dime and use it to get pennies and do it again. You have what you have, and then you do whatever you want with it. Are you still taking the deal? I'm going to give you a dime for every penny, but you have to wait 10 years to have it. And this is what you'd be saying, exactly what TM Permaculture Mike is saying right now, right? Where can I get a penny? How many pennies can I find? It's no different. It's the same deal. Your unit bias is tripping you up, but I'll never be a whole coiner. Well, if you keep saying that, I guarantee you won't. You don't know what will happen in your future. You don't know how you'll figure out how to carve out more investment. You don't know what's going to happen to you if you actually just do what I said. Do your spending journal, carve out a number, start investing in Bitcoin. The reason I give you something that simple is I know if you do it, I don't know how far you go, but I know you'll do more because everyone that has done more. Everyone that's done this has emailed me at some point and said, or commented to me on social or whatever and said, I started out at $5 a day, or I started out at $3 a day or whatever, and now I'm doing 10, or I'm doing 15, or some are doing 20. And that might seem really, really aggressive, which is why I don't push it. I push kind of like somewhere between $2 and $5 a day will get you off the ground. It'll get you starting to think. You'll start to watch the accumulation. Okay? And this, again, is now a favorable versus an unfavorable asymmetric risk. A symmetric risk, again, is where the risk and the reward are balanced. An asymmetric risk is where I have a high potential for return, but a greater potential for risk. And that's what most people do when they buy stocks and bonds and mutual funds. I have a long time ago. This has a really high compounded annual growth rate. As long as the company's in there and the manager and the economy and everything doesn't go to shit, I should do okay. And I'm going to take an extreme risk for an extreme return. But when you get into a point where you have what's called an asymmetric risk that favors the investor, the upside is high and the downside is low. And again, if you're looking 5 years or more with your money right now, and that's the kind of money you should be doing this with, you have an asymmetric risk in your favor. And however you need, like if it's the penny for a dime or the dime for a penny thing that does it for you, if it's understanding the number bias, the unit bias, silver versus gold, whatever it is, you need to grab onto it. Can't afford it, I find out, almost as always just bad spending. So please keep that spending journal for me. Please do. Please keep a spending journal for yourself. I mean, it's for me too, because when you email me in 5 years, it's a big payday for me. Every time I hear, because of you, this happened in my life, those are my best paydays. That's what I get out of this, because, yeah, you're not going to move the needle on the Bitcoin price. And if you are young with time, that DCA method is all you need, because I know the number will grow. I know the number will go up. I know that as you see success, you will put more in, and I know what will happen. When the number goes down, because, again, we're back to that bell curve, right? We're back to that idiot in the middle. We're all that idiot at times, right? We're all the window licker at times. When people just ape into an investment, or they throw a big chunk of money at it once every 6 months or something like that, they put their bonus in it, whatever it is. What ends up happening is when the number goes down, right, when there's a bad time in the market, when there's a correction in the market, when there is a down period in the market, when the volatility is to the negative instead of the positive, that's the person who sells. I had to sell it before it went to zero. It's been around 15 years, fool. It ain't gone to zero. It ain't going to zero. What are you doing? But the person who built up an equal value going in daily or weekly. When it goes down, you know what they do? They look around and the dog starts going, don't sell me, mother. Don't sell me. Don't sell me. Right? You're looking at your dog and going, I wonder how much that dog's worth. Right? Like, that's what people start. Now, don't sell your dog. But that's what happens when you are going in, instead of trying to get rich, you are trying to build wealth. And you've been putting it in over time. And you've looked at the money as it went in. Okay? And you've looked at that as wealth building the entire time. And you followed the number one rule of this. Remember I said about some things being so simple that your mind will repel it? This is what actually keeps people out of Bitcoin. The only guidance you need to become wealthy with Bitcoin over time, especially if you're in your 20s or 30s right now, is one sentence. And it's almost not a sentence. It's almost just a phrase. And every day with more sats than you started with. Period. Now, there's a reason that most of the Bitcoin influencers out there, crypto influencers, whatever you want to call them, will not tell you that. Won't say, and if they say it, they gloss right over it and go on to something else. Like, it's just a soundbite for them. It's boring. I guarantee you, if you go to my site and you use the search function and you put building wealth boring in, you're going to find a show that you would have been very well off to have taken the advice back when I did it, because Bitcoin was part of it and not shitcoining was part of it. And it was called Building Wealth is Boring. It's probably two and a half years old at this point, somewhere in that range. Building Wealth is Boring. And it is boring, especially if you're trying to keep people's attention for a 1.5 hour podcast. You got to come up with all this bullshit, right? And some of it's legit. Like when you see people like Mike Saylor, Jack Maulers, et cetera, talking about retirement planning. What's the other? Mark Moss. He's a little shifty for me, but the overall overriding macro is damn good, right? Of how you could structure a retirement plan using the wealth formula of the wealthy without actually ever paying taxes or losing it. And the more debt you have, the more power you have. Okay, I get that. I get that, but that's advanced thinking. I can't take that thinking to someone that owns zero Bitcoin right now or has $100 worth and has a freaking heart attack when it goes down $2,000 and it was at 118. I can't have that conversation. They're not ready for that. And so most of these guys, they put all these bells and whistles and hype on it to keep your attention and your focus. When everything I'm telling you today is so you believe that one sentence. That's the only thing I want you to take away from the show. If you believe that your life will be better in the future, if you make that penny for a dime deal today and see it simply as, I don't care how many there are, if I end tomorrow with 1,000 more sats than I have today, that's like a dollar, I'm still on the right path. And if I don't feel it's enough, it's up to me to figure out how to make it more. If you'll leave with that mindset, and again, if you are not the daily person, for some reason, your mind just won't latch on to doing that. And I'm telling you, there are tons of places you can do this. Strike, River, I'm trying to think of the other one, Robinhood, but there's another one I'm trying to think of. Is it Block or is it, I don't know. There's tons of places you can buy a couple dollars a day if that's what you want to do. There's places you can buy $1 an hour. There's no real fees. You do it on Strike. It's insignificant. So however you want to do it, but if you're DCAing monthly or weekly, again, I still feel like you're ending every day with more sats because you've already allocated the funds. But trust me, daily is the way. And again, it's not like it has to be a big number. You can figure out by the month, divide by 30, and that's your daily number. Okay? It'll work out. The 31s and the 28 and the 30s, it'll all work out in the end, right? You feel it's a little bit less, add a quarter. I don't care. Do something. Make something happen. Cash App. Damn it. Thank you, Jade Thoreau or G Thoreau. I don't know how you say your name. That's what I was trying to think of as Cash App. You can do a Cash App. When I just named off all those different things, all of you have one of them or could tomorrow. So daily DCA. Again, I DCA right now. I'm up to about $10 a day. I started out toward the end of last year doing 5, just to be an example. And I'm like, I still buy larger blocks. right? When we drop a product set and we make a few thousand bucks, you know, $500 and buy Bitcoin, or $500 put it aside and wait for a dip and buy Bitcoin. But I still do it every day, and I naturally increased it because I started to realize how much it was benefiting me to do it. That's why I want you guys to be doing it too, okay? And yeah, keep those questions coming with that question at the beginning. All caps would be better, but I saw that one, Steve, so I got you. If you're 30 to 40-something, a lot of 30 to 40-somethings actually have quite a bit of wealth. Those are your young to mid-millennials right now are in their 30s and 40s. The millennial generation, for all their bitching and whining and gnashing of teeth about not having money, is actually, you know, 10 years ago, were being referred to as the Ben Franklin generation. They were saving their money, okay? And so a lot of you guys have 401ks, and you're like, but it's stuck in there. I can't get it out. Go to your HR Karen and ask a simple question. Does our 401k plan have a brokerage option for some portion of our money? And HR Karen probably won't know, but she'll find out and she'll get back to you. And if she says no, wrong answer, HR Karen. We need a brokerage option, and start talking to everybody you can in your company that you can influence and say, we want that added to our 401k. Many of you will find you already have it. If you have that, you can buy Bitcoin in your 401k. Yes, it will be an ETF. I'm not going to get into the debate. I don't want to hear the debate from you special Bitcoiners. I don't want to hear it. I want you to shut up, and I want you to realize this is exactly what an ETF is for. It is for money within an investment vehicle that cannot, because of that vehicle, invest outside of certain parameters that the ETF fits in and regular Bitcoin doesn't. It's the same ROI, shut up. But that would be a way for you to start buying Bitcoin. And what you might want to do is actually pick your weakest investment and liquidate all or a portion of it into, hopefully, well, once you have a brokerage option, you'll be able to have a cash fund, not a bond fund that can actually lose money, and move it into that cash fund. And then you can daily or weekly buy in over time. Because what I'm not telling anybody to do is to ape in with a shitload of money unless you have a reason for it. And I'll give you a potential reason for it when I get to the older folks in a minute. But you guys have money, okay? Now, I know I got a 38-year-old that's broke, that's this close to living in the poorhouse or their car. Okay, I will give that 1% an out. The vast majority of people in their 30s and 40s right now do have surplus cash flow. Even if you're not saving it, even if you're pissing it away, it's there. You're not managing it properly. So one way or another, you should be pumping in harder than the person who's 25 because they have more time than you. Time is on their side. Time is on their side in a big way. These are people who might be retiring with Bitcoin sitting at $10, $15 million. I know some of you think that's crazy. It's not. It's inevitable and eventually. With what's going on, it's inevitable. And it could happen way faster than I think. But I'm comfortable telling somebody that's 25, that plans to work to 60, that's something likely to happen to them. And you don't need a whole Bitcoin. Even that far in the future, you wouldn't need a whole Bitcoin to do okay for yourself in retirement, especially if it's only a piece of your retirement. But if you're 45, you got 20 years to 65. You see what I'm saying? There's a difference. There's a big difference. You're 45. There's 20 years they have to compound that you don't have. So you have to be more aggressive. And you're at a point where you're going to get really hammered by what's coming if you don't. Okay. Now let's talk to the people that are like 50s and 60 somethings, right? People my age. Start slow, but you need to look at this more as a wealth preservation strategy. Again, don't ape in. One of the things about as you go up, people have more money, and you would think that's a great thing. Well, it can be, but if you ape in at an all-time high, I still think you're okay. Unless you need the money next year and you don't have a plan on how to get the money back out and the loans are getting better, but they're not quite where they need to be yet to be predictable, dropped into a spreadsheet with the conservative nature necessary to live off it for the rest of your life. They're not quite there yet. They're getting there. Strike is getting there. And 21 Capital is going to get us there. 21 Capital is going to raise enough cash. They're going to be able to do like fixed interest 6.5% loans. And that's going to be very reasonable on an asset with like a floor of a 20% CAGR, right? And so your older folks, you're going to be closer to retirement, and you might start thinking about, one, preserving your wealth, but two, preserving your tax consequences of using your wealth. And it all depends on where your money is. And I'm not a financial advisor, but you guys need to be thinking about it, again, differently still. And differently than me, because even though I'm 53, right? I think I'm 53. I think that's right. Or I will be. I think I will be in a couple of weeks. I'll be 53. I'm either going to be 53 or 55 because it's an odd year and I'm an odd age. That's how little I pay attention to my age. But since I'm sitting on a big stack already, I don't need to worry about it the same way somebody has none does. But then there's a converseness to this, right? The guy that's 55 years old around my age, right? And you say, well, what's your net worth right now? And he says $5.7 million. Probably okay no matter what he does. Probably. You don't necessarily know, though, do you? You don't necessarily know. Because the one thing about having more money, right, thoughts about having more money, one of the problems with having more money is that inflation hurts worse. If you have $100,000 and we have 5% inflation ate $5,000. If you have $1 million, we have 5% inflation. Inflation just ate $50,000 of your dollars. It's just a different way to think about it. TM Permaculture says strike isn't in Tennessee yet. I don't think that's true. I'm not sure how that works. I think Nicole sends money to me on strike. I don't know, man. You need to check into that. I'll let it go, though, because maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's other ways. Maybe you can be in Tennessee and not be in Tennessee at the same time. I don't know. There's definitely ways to do that. The other thing I want you to think about if you're older, how to tie into Bitcoin with less risk. MicroStrategy, which is now Strategy B, has come out with multiple financial offerings. And one of them, and I don't remember what this one's called, has a guaranteed 8% dividend. You put in $1,000, you get 80. You put in $100,000, you know, you get $8,000. Right? You put in $1 million, right? 8%, you get $80,000 a year without your principal in decline. Now that investment itself can vary, but the dividend is a guaranteed 8% dividend. It is a fixed income instrument backed by Bitcoin, and it is solvent with Bitcoin's price going in half and staying there for 32 years. So even if you're kind of entering a place where fixed income with your wealth makes sense, there's STRK is the product. I think that is correct. Oh, TN Permaculture says they have strike but not the loan. I don't care. You'll figure it out if it's that important to you. One way or another. Anyway, but Lily Farms Food says it's STRK. And that is one of their instruments, so she's probably right. There's another one that doesn't have quite the guarantee on the dividend. The dividend can float, but the target dividend is 10%. Both of those are excellent fixed income investments without all the volatility innate to Bitcoin in of itself, because the volatility of the investment is the best based on investor sentiment, not the underlying value of Bitcoin. And generally, when people buy a dividend-producing instrument and it's spitting out 8% and it keeps spitting out 8% and it doesn't stop spitting out 8%, they don't really care about how it's managed. They care about their 8%. And this is the reality right now. The fixed income space cannot operate on bonds anymore. People can't live on 4% with 4% inflation. And I don't care what they say the CPI is. You know, when you look at spending your money, that the official inflation number is bullshit, and it's closer to 4%. So you need instruments paying 8 to 10% to be in a fixed income space without real heavy risk to live well into the future and not run out of money. So Strategy has put these instruments out. It is a direct attack on the fixed income traditional bond market. And it's going to start sucking money out of that market, because what a lot of people don't understand is there are trillions of dollars in that market that can only invest in that type of instrument, at least to a portion of their allocation. So I'm talking about a pension fund manager managing the pension for the city of Boston would be an example, or for the firefighters in Chicago, or the teachers union in New York City. I'm talking about managers like that. They will have within their charter statements that you must invest no more than this and no less than this in this class of investment, and that all the money has to go into its allotment. Okay? So then let's say that they have a 25% allocation to fixed income instruments. That's pretty much municipal and federal bonds. That's pretty much, and they pay 3.5%, 4%. They're bleeding money. And Saylor's like, how'd you like 8? And there's no other way to do it and get that kind of number unless you have like some crazy ass interest rate hike, which will kill the economy. So we're not getting that either. We got Trump threatening to fire Powell now because he won't bring the rates down enough. He sure as hell ain't going to jack them up 7 points and try to make a CD pay 8% like it did in the 80s again. Those days are gone. Our system will nuclear melt down with interest rates that would allow that. It will, I mean, full on Fukushima, Three Mile Island, and Chernobyl in one. That's what would happen. So that's not happening. So you have all this retirement money in all these chartered investment managed funds that's seeking higher return. And now you have a company going, here it is. It's listed. It fits. It's exactly the class of investment that they can invest in. If 4%, 3%, 1% of that money moves in there, you can't even imagine and that money is indirectly flowing into the Bitcoin space. Do you understand that? That is just one piece of this. Then what did I tell you guys that are 30-somethings and 40-somethings with 401ks to do? Ask for a brokerage option in your 401k, or just tell Karen, hey, Karen, you know what? We want like either the BlackRock or Fidelity or Grayscale or whatever. We want one of the freaking Bitcoin ETFs in our shit, right? When you get that annual meeting most companies have where they bring everybody in the break room and they bring the financial wire in from Edward Jones, whatever. Hey, when are we going to get a Bitcoin ETF in our 401k? When are we going to get a Bitcoin ETF in our 401k? I want to know. When are we going to get it? When? And talk to all your buddies and everybody. Just when are we going to get one? That's going to happen everywhere anyway. Not because I said it, because it's going to happen. And then you know what you do? When they tell you, no, Mr. Jones is a very conservative man or whatever bullshit they make up on the way out, when you go to shake his hand, go, I want you to know I'm ceasing all contributions to my 401k at this best time. I'm looking for ways to liquidate it without too much of an adverse tax consequence because I want to invest in Bitcoin and you won't let me. So go tell your boss that. If that happens to that guy at two or three places, you're getting a freaking ETF. And that opens things up because right now, only a couple percent of people even have access to it in their 401s. There's no reason other than HR Karen and the investment managers haven't made it available. And look at the impact already. I mean, what I want to do right now, because I haven't done this in a while on air, I want to show you the inflows into the Bitcoin ETFs. And I'm pulling it up on my screen right now. And I'm just, it's loading really slow, even though it usually loads really fast. It's built on a tool called Dune. And all I want to do is show you a graph. So all I want to show you is right here. This is inflows. ETF day is back here where the Grayscale conversion happened. Grayscale and some others on that day had a grand total of 619,000 Bitcoin held in ETFs. Here, a little bit more than a year later, 1.2 million, 1.242 million. 937. I mean, we're real close to 1.243 million. Like that will happen by the end of the day. Do you see that growth? Not in price, in quantity of Bitcoin held. Now that's to kind of round it off and make it understandable. That's 1/21st of all Bitcoin that will ever exist. 1/21st. 1 million of 21 million are already held in ETFs. right? You've got companies coming out like 21 Capital that says our goal is to do what? To stack as much Bitcoin as we possibly can. You have the freaking maniac in Michael Saylor. They already have 500,000 Bitcoin. Strategy's holding half of what all 11 ETFs are holding combined. How many more times can this happen? And there's no way to make more. All you can do is split it into smaller and smaller pieces. See, those Satoshis that you're bitching about, well, if I buy $5 worth, that's a little bit under 5,000 sats. That's not much. What do you go for when you can't get Bitcoins anymore? Satoshis. Satoshis. And I'm not going to tell you that if you buy $5 worth of Bitcoin a day for a year, you're going to be wealthy, because you're not. You're going to put in, I think I did the math one time, it's like $1,300. And you could have, at the end of this year, depending on what happens at the end of the cycle, whether we have the drop or not, you could put in $1,300, and I'm going to tell you flat out, you could look at it, it could say $800. Your check is an asshole. But if you do it daily, you're not going to feel that way. You're going to be like, ooh, I get to buy more. Ooh, I get to buy more, and you know what's coming. See, I think really to become a solid Bitcoiner, a true Bitcoiner, it takes, and this is scary to say, because some of you I don't think have 4 days in you. Because I've seen you. The guys that go buy $50 or $250 with or something like that, they're the ones, they sit there and they refresh that freaking app every 5 minutes. Am I rich yet? Am I? No, you're not, stupid. And if it goes down 10%, they have a heart attack. But I think it really takes 4 years. It takes 4 years because at the end of a four-year cycle, you've ridden everything. You've gone all around the amusement park. You've been through the loops. You've been through the ups and the downs and the dips and the turns. And the thing is, you know that the entire roller coaster, the shape is basically the same, but they just put 10 floors on it for the next trip. The highs will be higher. The lows will be relatively the same from the highs. But the lows will be higher from the original lows and higher from the original highs. And it takes that crucible to mint you. And I think that the people with the most diamond hands right now, it doesn't matter. Like if you drop the price, like some bunch of short sellers come in and they knock it down to 60 grand in a couple days, we would literally be on next door going, I have shit to sell. Come buy it. Those people, they're the ones that went through the block wars. Roger Ver's bullshit, Craig Wright's bullshit. If you held through that, if you were strong enough already, like if you came in 2013, 2014, so by the time we get to that 2017, 2018, you'd been through one cycle and you're like, I'm not falling for this. Even if you shit coined like I did back then, but you just still your Bitcoin, you held your freaking Bitcoin. You said, no, I will not buy into this. And you came out the other end of that. You can't even, I'll be fair. I can't be reasoned with about this. I can't be reasoned with about this because I went through something we'll never go through again. That's never coming back. That level of attack. And when you've been through an attack and you realize that was it, that was 100%. That was all in. That was billionaires using their early Bitcoin earnings to attack Bitcoin, announcing it publicly and then doing it and then claiming to be victims when they lost. And that didn't work. Everything else you say, it's vaporware. It's going to go to zero. Peter Schiff says so, whatever. It's water off a duck's back, and that duck is wearing a raincoat. 100%, guys. But definitely look into those Bitcoin yield options and realize Bitcoin's safer now than 10 years ago. All of you that keep telling me, I wish I would have listened back then. I missed the opportunity. I don't know what to say. Why didn't you listen 10 years ago? Have you actually really thought about that? Instead of saying, I missed the opportunity, why were you risk adverse 10 years ago? And you actually had a good reason for it. It was an unproven technology with so many variables as to what could cause it to fail. That's why 10 years ago I was saying, put the money in it that you would take to Vegas. Right? That's what I said. It's probably nowhere near as risky, but you should have that mindset. But you should buy some of it because you know you would if you walked into a casino right now and you had $50 in your pocket you'd probably throw $20 worth of chips on the table and see where the wheel landed and have fun and drink a free, cheap piece of crap well drink while you did it and justify losing the money that way. With this, you're probably not going to lose the money, but it may not pay off. Okay? That's why you didn't invest, because if you looked at it fully intellectually, the government can ban it. You know, is there a bug in the code? Will some other coin take over and be the real Bitcoin? Like, there were all these reasons that even if they were wrong, they were at least worth asking the question. So that's why you said no. So what you were saying is the risk is too asymmetric against me to invest. And now I'm telling you, the investment is asymmetric in your favor, and you're saying, I wish I would have invested when it was asymmetric against me. Do you understand that's what you're doing? Because you are. Now, if you just didn't know about it 10 years ago, then everything I said doesn't pertain to you. Except it probably does, because you probably wouldn't have done it 10 years ago. And then I want to, the elephant in the room is always the bitter pill, right? And so the orange pill is the bitter pill. There are a ton of people that still can't admit they were wrong about this because of how much it cost them. They look back and go, if I started investing $100 a month when this shit was $600, I'd be a multimillionaire and retired on an island by now. That's what they're playing in the back. They'll never say it out loud. And so their mind, the cognitive distance, I can't be this wrong. It's still going to zero. Look, somebody on TV wearing a suit with a beard said it was going to zero. And this guy with a beard on YouTube, I can't trust him. I can trust the guy. That's the guy that told you not to buy it in the first place. That's the guy that told you not to buy it in the first place. Do you know the only reason Peter Schiff talks about Bitcoin and shits on it? It ain't because he don't believe in it. And I'm going to tell you right now, it ain't because he don't own it. Because go to Schiff Gold right now and see if you can't buy gold for Bitcoin from Peter Schiff. You think he immediately converts it all to dollars with the way he feels about dollars? Do you think he takes all the spread and buys more gold and holds just gold? I mean, you do have to, like, pay people and stuff, pay bills and stuff, right? So what do you think? You think he got rid of all his Bitcoin? You don't think he's holding Bitcoin? Come on. Come on. The reason Peter Schiff shits on Bitcoin right now is because gold is boring. Gold is yesterday. Gold is useful as what it is, a wealth hedge, right? An inflation hedge. It is not useful as long for long-term wealth building at this point. It's heavy, it's clunky, it's hard to secure, it's hard to move. It's not programmable, it's not weightless, it does not move at the speed of light. It's a rock. And it's a useful rock, but its use is for a time before computers and telecommunications. So that will always inherently cap its potential growth. It will always do that. Always. Peter Schiff shits on Bitcoin because if all he had was gold, not a single person would listen to him. He wouldn't be on MSNBC. He wouldn't be on Fox Money. He wouldn't be on CNBC and their financial shit show, whatever that's called. He wouldn't be on TV with Jim Cramer. He wouldn't be on, you know, TV with any of these people. The only reason anybody pays attention to him is because he craps on Bitcoin. Yeah, boomers would follow him on X, but it wouldn't get him on these financial shows. When he puts out a post about how great gold is, even with his, like, you know, million followers or whatever, it gets, like, you know, a couple hundred likes and 20 comments. When he puts out a comment saying how Bitcoin is stupid and going to zero, you know, he gets way more views than he even has followers. He gets tens of thousands of comments. He gets tens of thousands of shares. He's using Bitcoin because his asset is boring. It's even more boring than Bitcoin has become. And Bitcoin's going to bore us all the way up to $1 million. Mark my words. Mark my words. And why should you trust this guy with a beard on YouTube versus that guy with a beard on MSNBC or CNN or Fox Business? Because this guy in a beard told you a couple years ago, and you can't make it up when it's in the past and it's recorded. The internet's forever. When Bitcoin hit $69,000 and it started coming down, I didn't tell you exactly when it hit it. When it started to come down, I went, this is the end of the cycle. It's coming down. And I said the bottom will be $14,400 or thereabouts, and it hit 15 and change. And I said, okay, I was close. There's the bottom. And I guarantee you, if you search my site for accumulation trough, you will find an episode when the price was there where I said this is the accumulation trough, and I think the show was titled, It Will Never Be This Easy to Stack Sats Again. And so you don't have to go back to 2014 to have listened to me and benefited. You don't have to go back at all. You can benefit today. But you go back 2 years, 2.5 years, something like that, and you can find, and you'll listen, and you listen to me lay it out, and you go, what is this asshole redneck hippie duck farmer know? I know math. I don't know Einstein math, but I know math. And the math is so simplistic that I quote Einstein when I talk about it. Okay? Bitcoin is to economics as the speed of light is to physics. And when I say that, people think it's hyperbole. No, it's a... The reason the speed of light was used isn't because light's so fast. It's because it's a constant. It's a cosmological constant. By having a fixed known velocity of a thing that never changes, you can calculate everything else. Got it? In economics, everything else is a variable. Everything else is a variable. How much gold is a variable? It's pretty consistent, the rate at which it will be extracted from the ground, but it's not a known, and the stockpile keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. In fact, what keeps the inflation rate of gold low is how long it's been mined and how big the existing stock is. Okay? Which, by the way, is the only reason the United States economy hasn't blown up yet, because when they print like $1 trillion, like, oh my God, but it's $1 trillion versus 36 trillion. It's not $1 trillion versus $2 trillion. We're so 33% inflation. Okay? Bitcoin, 21 million, period. We know the day it will stop having new units. We know the frequency it will be mined at for every day until that day. What will we do then? I don't know. My grandchildren will be old, and they can, my great grandchildren that I won't know can figure that out. Not my problem. Not my problem, but when you have miners able to verify transactions in the most valuable asset on the planet, the fees alone will probably take care of it. But it's not my problem. I'll be dead and retired and dead again before I have to worry about the last Bitcoin being mined. So when people bring that up, it's like quantum computing. What if they turn off the internet? All this other bullshit, right? Right? It's a light switch. Any of it. TN Permaculture says never see 30 again. 30K again. I'm inclined to agree with that, but I don't know how many times I heard that about 10K. So I'm a little careful there, but I would say you're going to be lucky to see 60 in a really hard washout on the other side of the cycle. And I just don't know. I'm not guaranteeing anything here, despite my track record. Like, I have a pretty good track record of this. I'm telling you, it's going to be within 5% of what I say. And I don't know. And right now I don't know. Again, like I said earlier this week, when I was asked about this, we have to see the top of the cycle, what that looks like. Is it parabolic like it's been? Do we have October where it's like insane? And when it comes around the other side, does it come down hard, or does it come down hard and bounce? And like, we have to see those variables to know where we go. But yeah, 30K, the dog would be really like, bitch, don't you do it. I'm like, nah, man, I ain't going to do it. But let me see your collar. That's a nice collar. Here's a rope. I wonder if anybody wants this collar for $1. Like, I mean, I'm serious. I'd start looking at my gun collection if we got down below that. If we got to 30K, yeah, I'm looking at fish tanks. I'm looking at some guns I haven't fired in a while. Some, you know, I'm looking at some antique fishing gear that I have because I thought it was cool when I bought it. You know, I'm looking around. I'm looking at a safe with some silver in it and going, I don't need this much silver. Like, that's where I would be. But again, if you aped in all in one go because you wanted to get rich instead of build wealth, that's when you're stupid and you sell. And you know who buys it when you sell it? Now it's billionaires and us. Every time you freak out and sell, it is people like us that are buying from you. See, this is the thing about Bitcoin. Bitcoin did something that was never supposed to happen. It's not just about a private monetary system. It's not just about a monetary system the government can't alter. It did something that I don't even think Satoshi understood he was doing. Maybe he did, but I don't think he did. There was never any mention of it in the early days. When I say early, it may be first couple of 3 years. He informed us of how the rich operate. I think we discovered it. I think he laid the groundwork and we discovered it, either intentionally or unintentionally. That's what he did. And what I mean is the rich never sell their assets. And the only time the rich do sell an asset, they never sell it for cash. They roll it into a better asset class. That's all they ever do. That's what a 1301 rollover in real estate is. I cash out this property. I take the money and borrow more. And even though I made a massive profit, I pay no tax on it because all I have to do is roll it into a more expensive investment that qualifies. We were not supposed to know this. We were not supposed to know this. I'm going to star that one, Jason, because you're right, but you're right for now. We aren't to October yet, right? We aren't to October yet. We weren't supposed to know that. How many of you know that now? How many of you, because of Bitcoin, know the rich never sell their assets for money? They either hold their assets forever or they roll one asset into another asset. Did you ever hear that in school? Include those of you that went to like highfalutin universities. Even those of you who have degrees that are either in economics or around economics, did anybody ever tell you that before Bitcoin? The rich never sell their assets for money. They either hold their assets forever and leverage and borrow against them using debt as money, or they exchange the asset for a better quality asset. They sell asset A to another rich guy who's ready to move up, and they move up themselves. And then they take all their debt that they can use as money and not pay tax on it and wait for you to retire, and they buy your assets on the cheap because they had no real cost in obtaining them, and you did the suffering on their behalf. Did you ever hear anything like that in your life? And I'm telling you right now, without Bitcoin or something exactly like it called another thing, a rose is still a rose, you know, no matter what you call it. You wouldn't know that. We're not supposed to know that. When you say it's freedom money, that's what it really means. You have knowledge that was always there, and I couldn't see it either. If somebody would have told me that in 2005, I would have been like, huh, I don't know, maybe. Like, now you can't convince me otherwise, because it's not that I think it. I know it. I've examined what they do. I've looked at their blueprint. And now what we have are people, peons like us, following their blueprint. Here's the secret. It breaks their blueprint. Whose assets are they going to buy now? The good news for them is for a long time, they have plenty of people who will keep selling their assets in their retirement to buy from. Plenty. But the money is being sucked out. Hey, Lazarus Rex, thanks for the super chat. I really appreciate that. That will probably fix the fact that I'm not going to monetize today's video, even after the live, because that clip that I put in at the beginning is probably going to demonetize it anyway, so I just won't do it. So thank you. The end thing, man. You didn't miss it. You're missing it now. You're missing it. You didn't. Every single one of you that says, I missed the opportunity, no, you're missing the opportunity. And I told you that when it was $600. And I told you that when it was $3,000. And I told you that when it was $10,000. And I told you that when it was $20,000. And I told you that when it was $40,000. And I told you that when it was $60,000. And I told you that when it went back to $14,000. And I told you that when it back up to 30 and to 60 and to 80 and to 100. And I'm telling you now. And so, when will you believe it? When will you believe it? When will you realize that you're missing it instead of missed it? You know, that ending of a verb, it matters. And this is your life we're talking about. Again, it's a simple rule. End every day with more sats than you started. There isn't a person listening to me who, if they really want to, can't do that. Not one of you. And ask yourself, if something's that simple and costs that little, do I really want to be the person that doesn't do it? And I'm a little leery telling you this right now because we are like in the all-time high range. And that's when everybody wants to buy, right? That's when everybody wants to buy. But I also know that I'm not going to tell you to wait. Because if you wait for the next bottom, and I think Mike just posted kind of the date we'd be looking at, mid-2027 would probably be our next low if it happens the way it has in the past. And I don't know that it is. I don't know that it is this time. There are some dynamics here that are totally different. There are companies who have a vested interest to keep the price up that can themselves print fiat in a way to buy more Bitcoin, and their action itself supports the price. And those pull downs are good for them as long as they don't go too low. So you might have corporate interest setting the next floor higher than it would be by traditional math, because we've never been through a cycle with this institutional support before, ever. Now, they also have a tendency to take profits. Let's be honest about that. But most of the institutions holding the Bitcoin now are not holding it as an income-generating asset. They're holding it as an underlying layer to do other things with, like strategy is. So that's a reality. And one of the players in this is, again, 21 Capital. One of the partners in that is Jack Mallers. And Jack has started doing YouTube videos out of nowhere. And they're kind of low rent videos, man. Like they're about like, when I say low rent, I'm not criticizing them. They're kind of like mine, but he's in his closet where he built Strike. And when you watch his videos and you see the closet he's in, it's as big as my whole office, right? It's a nice house. This is not a guy that started with no money. His family has money. But he just released a new video. I have a link in the audio side on the notes, the show notes for today of that video. If I haven't made it clear to you yet, this is something you need to be doing. Maybe listen to him. Listen to the young hotshot multimillionaire, destined to be a billionaire, if you don't want to listen to the Redneck Duck Farmer. And again, I'll put that link there for you. And I think you'll realize, like, maybe he has a different presentation style or whatever. But we're basically saying the same shit. Next up, I want to say real quick, if you really want to understand Bitcoin, you need to understand why fiat failed. And Saif Dean Amos has two great books, The Fiat Standard and The Bitcoin Standard. I recommend both of them, and I actually recommend the second book, The Fiat Standard, first. But The Bitcoin Standard does a really good job of explaining Bitcoin and why fiat failed. And it's almost impossible to truly understand either one without both. And so that's my item of the date again, The Bitcoin Standard by Saif Dean Amos. And this is available on Audible as well as a print book or a Kindle. And this one really works well as an audiobook. It really does. So especially if you have Audible credits and it's no real cost to you, I really recommend this book. And you can find all these books on my website as well at tspaz.com. But The Bitcoin Standard, The Fiat Standard, and then Broken Money by another author named Lynn Alden. If you take in those three books, and what I actually did, I bought this one first because it was so highly recommended, and it's The Bitcoin Standard, and I listened to it. Then I got Lynn's book, Broken Money, and I listened to it. And then I got Saif Dean's other book, Fiat Standard, and listened to it. And after doing that, I went back and I listened to Broken Money, and then I listened to The Fiat Standard, and then I listened to The Bitcoin Standard again. And my understanding went up exponentially the first time through, but it went up like 10x over the first time and the second time. And so if you do want to take this to more than just end every day with more stats, if you do want a higher level of understanding, then I recommend those books. And then if I'm going to pitch a book, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pitch my book too. Laws of Life, Ditch the System, Design Your Life. Very little about cryptocurrency, Bitcoin in it. It's just more the things I did to build my life the way that I have. And, you know, part of that is understanding and seeing opportunity and how your mental computer works so that you don't reject gifts or accept Trojan horses. And there's a lot of that in this book. And if you have a young person in your life that needs a good kick in the ass, but they won't listen to you, maybe they'll listen to this book. And as I've said for quite a few weeks now, the corrected version of the book is shipping because those of you who bought early, and thank you for it, got typos and typesetting errors because of something that went wrong that I'm not going to explain again. With that, I do want to wrap up, but I want to take your questions, and there's quite a few today. If there's a shitcoin question, you'll see it pop up and you just go away. I'm not even going to rant about it. Food Plant Nursery Brookville says, I'm planning on retirement in 2 years at 55, but do you think we will be in a downturn in the four-year cycle? Thanks for pushing me into Bitcoin, been 5 years of stacking. I do think we will be in a downturn, historically speaking. What that number is, I can't tell you. And I'm going to save my thoughts for that for later. What I would do is be conservative with your retirement planning in that two-year cycle, and I wouldn't rely on Bitcoin alone for your retirement. I would be thinking about your other income streams. And, you know, we'll see. There is also a potential that we do not have, you know, a 60-70% downturn this time. There's a big potential that we have something like a 40% downturn and everybody runs into the streets and the dogs and cats rain and the puppy kittens come out and vampires eat your children or whatever, according to the news. And El Salvador's broke again and all, even with that level of a downturn. And that really shouldn't alter your retirement plans too much. I'd have to know more about how you plan to retire and what role Bitcoin plays in that. And then I'm getting in a financial advisor role. I would tell you right now, this is about, you know, if you have a financial advisor, investment manager, something like that, that helps you with your retirement planning, even if they don't handle your Bitcoin because you do that on your own, if you have an investment manager, retirement planner, et cetera, right now, I don't care how much you like them. I don't care how many times he sends you cookies at Christmas. I don't care if he knows your kids' names, your grandkids' names. I don't care if he sends you fucking birthday cards or, you know, Father's Day cards because he knows you're a proud father, or he sends birthday cards to your grandchildren. I don't care how much relationship sales he does. If this person cannot discuss, integrate, and plan with Bitcoin as part of your retirement right now, the most grace I would give them is 60 days. And in that 60 days, I'd be shopping for a new person to manage my money and help me with my planning. And I would replace them with somebody who's not a Bitcoin maniac, who says, just put all your money there, but someone that sees Bitcoin as an important component in your asset structure. If they're not ready to do that, they're not ready to invest with you. I'll put it to you this way. If you do not include Bitcoin in your portfolio, you're shorting Bitcoin. And shorting Bitcoin as an investment manager right now is ir-fucking-responsible, and you are committing investing malpractice, especially when you have a client who tells you, I want Bitcoin to be part of my investments, and you tell them no, that person should fire you on the spot. I'm sorry. Actually, I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. Okay? Prep to Protect says, can you help me understand Bitcoin? Is there a limited amount of coin? Do they make more in demand? No, they don't make any more on demand. There's a limited amount of coin. You haven't done 5 seconds of research, dude. I don't mean to be a dick, but that's a question you could have answered on 5 seconds on Google. And I'm not going to bore the audience with it. It's a fish cap, 21 million. It's unalterable. If you need confidence in that, you need to do independent research because it's abundant. Okay? Steve Shishi says, I have about 2.75 of Bitcoin, an ETF 200K in stocks, and 100K in cash, and a paid-off house. Should I put more in Bitcoin? Thanks. Steve, I can't answer that for you, right? So it sounds like he's got 2.75 Bitcoin, but he's holding like iBit or something like that. So it's kind of hard to read this. 200K in stocks. So he's got 2.75 Bitcoin, $200,000 worth of stocks, and 100K in cash. I don't know how old you are. You didn't put that in there. I'm guessing you're minimum in your 40s, just based on where you are. If you're in your 20s or early 30s with that, God bless you, bro. Yeah, really put more money into it. Like, you have more long-term gain ahead of you, right? But I'm looking at this guy and thinking he's probably closer to my age than to 25. I would continue to stack Bitcoin with that kind of an allocation because your cash is burning. Your cash is burning. It's burning while we sit here. At best, if you believe the lies, the CP lie, it's burning at around 2 to 3% a year of your money's burning. So when it comes to how fast you go into Bitcoin with its current price where it is at this peak for now, you have to decide what your allocation is in your time frame. But I would definitely put more in. Dave Mark says, thoughts on a Wyoming LLC holding company for Bitcoin? I don't care. I don't care how you hold Bitcoin. If you have a reason for that, great. If you're doing it because somebody said it somewhere on Instagram, probably not. Like, you'd have to tell me your reasoning for that. And I'm betting the reasoning is something dumb, right? Are you a Wyoming resident? Do you live in Wyoming? Or do you just think the Wyoming structure makes it more advantageous to use it to hold Bitcoin in, even though you live in Georgia, right? Do you even need to be holding it in an LLC? Why are you holding it in an LLC? Am I a tax attorney? No, I am not, right? So my instinct is no, but my answer is if you have a question like that, you need a qualified tax attorney, well-versed in tax law, reasoning behind the structure, reasoning behind the location of the structure, and with a fundamentally decent knowledge of Bitcoin. That's who answers that question for you, not the redneck duck farmer. John Dowie, do you think it makes sense to take some portion of BTC money and put it into a Roth IRA in order to invest in Bitcoin and take advantage of the tax deduction? No, I do not. Why? Because you have to pay the tax on it now. You can't put Bitcoin into a Roth IRA. You can't put anything into a Roth IRA except cash. So you have to sell the Bitcoin, pay the tax now, move the Bitcoin into the IRA, and then grow tax deferred after you took the haircut. So no, I mean, if you had all kind, like if you had a spreadsheet that showed how this worked, which I know you don't, then I would say, well, maybe. But just on its face, my instinct would be no, no. Now, some mathematician is going to try to break that. Go ahead. Jason Hensel says, math says 30K is possible. If this was the top, math does say 30K is possible. And I'll be on my roof, dancing naked, and figuring out what to sell if it happens. I will not shed a single effing tear. However, history does not suggest that you get a high, your market high, in the post-halving year in the summer. It's never happened. The post-halving high has always been October, November. So since we have not yet established the top, we can't establish the historical floor. And then, as I keep saying, even once we know the cycle top, if we have a traditional cycle top, we don't necessarily know that we'll have a traditional cycle bottom because we have a support mechanism in place that didn't exist ever. The whole thing has changed. I heard this time is different so many times in my years in Bitcoin, which now is like 13 years, right? I heard that so many times and it was always wrong. And the thing that made it wrong is when you said, why is it different? No one knew. Because these things are coming, but they hadn't come. But they hadn't come. There was a point where a person like Elon Musk could make a tweet and send Bitcoin up 15% with a tweet if he didn't buy any. That's gone. The volatility is depressed, but still there. Number go up, bowl gets smaller, right? So the number, Bitcoin is going nowhere but up long term. Forever. It's going up forever, Laura. And I'll be buying the top forever, Laura. Two of my favorite lines by Saylor, right? But there is the volatility. And what's happened is the kind of early on parabolic volatility experience from launch until about 2013, 2012, that went away. But the actual up, if you go to about 2014, 2015 on a graph of all time for Bitcoin, and you take a ruler, like this line that's on my flag back here, right? And you take that ruler and you do like an elementary form of technical analysis. I don't have a straight edge here. You take something straight, like a pencil, and you find the bottoms of the line where number go up, right? The line is almost perfectly straight. Not straight, it's up, but it's almost perfectly uniform. It shows a trend. An almost absolute perfect trend. You have this trend that's like really steep up until that point, and then it goes. And so that is a trend that you can rely on, I think, is your baseline. And again, to Henze's point here, if this is the top for this cycle, then the next low that hits that line that comes back up in the next cycle, that number is possible. That 30K number is possible. It would be the extreme example of it, but it's certainly possible. But again, history doesn't suggest we're there right now. It really doesn't. Question, would you let your 13-year-old borrow against his Bitcoin on Strike to fund his cattle breeding operation? He has put all his savings into Bitcoin. Maybe. What's the business plan? What's the revenue model? What is the timeline of repayment versus the timeline of revenue out of the project? What is the risk of the project? See, I would use this to educate my 13-year-old so that he can make business decisions when he's a 21-year-old. And so it doesn't matter that he's 13. It doesn't matter that it's cattle and we like cows. It doesn't matter that he was a good aunt and saved his money. None of that matters. If you are going to take risk against an existing investment to fund a business operation, then all the emotion needs to go in the toilet and get flushed, and then you dump in liquid plumber and you flush it four more times, and then you spray it with Lysol, and it goes away like the shit that it is. Emotion plays no role in a decision like this. It doesn't matter how much he wants to do it. It doesn't matter how pretty the freaking cow is. It doesn't matter at all. What matters is a projection. I'm going to acquire a calf. I'm going to raise the calf. This is why I'm doing it. In the worst case scenario, when this animal is mature and I can sell it for a profit, what is that conservative number? How does that factor into the repayment of the loan? What is the duration of that loan? And can I borrow in excess of the needed capital to make the surplus pay the interest payments? You see what I'm saying? Just to be clear, let's say you're going to borrow, I don't know what it takes to do this thing. So you were going to borrow $10,000 and you needed $10,000 and you had a 1 year repayment plan. And during that 1 year, you were going to have to make $1,000 in interest payments to keep the loan solvent. Okay. And at the end of that year, you know you're going to have enough money to repay the loan, so you never lost the underlying investment. Perfectly executed. You would borrow $11,000, not $10,000. You would put the $1,000 aside, and you would use the $1,000 to make the interest payments. That's how the retirement model works. If Excel doesn't say it works, no. If Excel says it works, if you break it by 15 to 20% after you build it, then yes. And then that kid will know more about economics than the average person who is 30 years old with a freaking degree in it from that one experience, including if the answer is no. Being able to say no and walk away from that is as valuable as being able to execute it to make it work, because it doesn't mean don't do it. It means don't do it this time. Don't do it this way. Don't do it with these numbers. And it also leads to how can I change the numbers? Not with emotion. With logistical changes, is there a way to get the calf for less? Is there a way to sell an option? Like, the only way I lose is if the calf dies, right? If you can have a buyer purchase an option in advance where they have basically obligated themselves to buy the animal in the end, that changes the numbers. It changes the risk profile. These are the things you ask. Yes, even with a 13-year-old, because if this kid loses the money they saved, you will break his tolerance for risk in the future, and it doesn't have to happen. How's that for an answer from a redneck? I don't think that one was that bad. Lazosaurus Rex said, $20, blah-ha-ha. I came to YouTube. Look up some videos on Bitcoin. Here's some cash for the laugh. Thanks for all you do, Jack. Thank you, Lazosaurus Rex. I appreciate you. Let's see if there are any other questions while I was doing that. Here's one. Dark Horse questions. Is high yield savings account not a waste in 2025? Why not make Swan my new HS? Do whatever you want. Dude, I'm tired of answering your questions. This is a guy that was going to buy like $50 worth of Bitcoin 2 years ago. I don't care who you use for your high yield savings account. I don't know why you have one. I don't know if it's like attached to something like a health savings account or something like that. So that's very investor dependent. You put your money where you want to. I can't tell you what to do with your spare cash flow other than you should be sweeping some of it into Bitcoin in some form. What exchange you use, what bank you use, what vehicle you hold it inside, those are not my questions to be answering, because I don't know enough about you and your situation to do that. And then I'm not picking on you individually. I mean this to everybody. I don't care enough about you to find out, because it's not my business. And I don't mean like mind your own business, not my business. I mean like that's not my business. The person that is supposed to sit down with you and figure all this out is the person that gets paid a fee to help you manage your money. Not me. I'm a podcaster. I manage my money and I have an investment manager for other money. And my business is communicating this way. I cannot take the interest required and the time required to give you a satisfactory answer to where you put your cash for a yield on savings. Now, I would say this, if I had two ways to hold money and they paid me the exact same interest on cash that for whatever reason I wanted to keep as cash, because I do, and one of those places paid me interest in cutbucks and one of those places paid me interest in Satoshis, I would choose the one if everything else is relatively equal. I can get out the money just as fast. I can use it just as fast. I can pay bills with it just as easily, whatever that is. If they're equivalent, even if the one that paid me Satoshis was a quarter point less than interest, I would take the Satoshis, because by the time I took the interest in dollars and self-converted it, I would lose more than the quarter point. So I would definitely take the interest payments on anything, the cash back on anything in sats if it's possible. That's why I push things like Strike, things like the Fold card, etc., right? You want any money that you can just basically kind of conjure out of thin air. And whether it's cash back on card purchases or points on a card purchase or interest on cash savings. Because we're not even talking a CD yield then, right? We're just talking about money you're just basically holding, and it's easier to hold it there than in a box, right? Then it's kind of like conjuring money out of thin air. And I would always rather conjure Bitcoin than conjure dollars. I'll ask you a question right now. So I said you can have a choice. And either way, you can't spend the money for 5 years. Either way, you can't do anything with it. You can't reinvest it. All you can do is take it and look at it. And I will give you $10,000 cash, or I will give you $8,000 USD value in Bitcoin today. And either way, you have to hold both of them, either or, for 5 years, and then you can do whatever you want with them. Which one would you take? And if you say cash, because it's $2,000 more, without factoring in the 5 years, I've been on the air for 1 hour and 53 minutes, and you wasted every second. With that, I'm going to wrap up. Tomorrow, we're going to have a great interview, a totally different direction that we're going to go. It's going to be more of a tactical, real-world, situational, survival-minded show, like the title of the show would indicate. Then Thursday, we'll do our expert counsel Q&A. I think this week we will have a Friday flashback, even though I've let that slip a couple times. And then next week we'll do it all over again. Take care. Get yourself into Bitcoin if you're not already there. Start today. Don't wait any longer. They said you should have a house the American way. Don't
dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. Revolution.